Hello, this is John Ivey from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the August 2019 issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to start today with the second row of Who's Who in Sports. Alex Rode, he's a goalie for Virginia. His height is 6'1", his weight is 180 pounds. He was born November 12, 1998, in Timotheum, Maryland. Rode earned Most Outstanding Player of the 2019 NCAA Tournament as a sophomore after going 4-0 and making 43 saves. He had 18 saves against Duke in the semifinals and 13 against Yale in the title game, a 13-9 win for the Cavaliers. He earned his first career point when he assisted on a goal in Virginia's overtime win over Maryland for the quarterfinals. As a senior at St. Paul's School, he was captain of the lacrosse and football teams and earned his fourth letter in ice hockey. Which team won the NCAA Women's Lacrosse Championship? Answer, the Maryland Terrapins. Next we have Stephen Curry, point guard of the Golden State Warriors. His height is 6'3". His weight is 190 pounds. He was born March 14, 1988 in Akron, Ohio. Curry led the Warriors to their fifth straight NBA Finals in 2019. In the first round against the Clippers, he set the record for most career playoff three-pointers, 386. By the end of the postseason, he had raised his total to 470. In January, Curry became the first player to make at least 200 three-pointers in seven consecutive seasons. Klay Thompson matched it in March. He averaged 27.3 points per game to pace Golden State in scoring for the seventh straight season, and he earned his sixth All-Star nod. Question, who held the playoff three-pointer record before Curry broke it? Answer, Ray Allen, who made the playoffs with the four teams. And finally, we have Rachel Garcia, pitcher and infielder for UCLA. Her height is 5'6". She was born March 30th, 1997 in Lancaster, California. After going 5-0 and finishing with 33 strikeouts in 36 innings at the 2019 Women's College World Series, Garcia was named the tournament's most outstanding player. She had a 1.75 ERA as the Bruins won their 13th title. She also hit a walk-off 3-1 home run in the bottom of the 10th inning against Washington to send UCLA to the championship series. Garcia, a junior, earned the Honda Sports Award as the nation's top softball player for the second consecutive year. Question, which school did UCLA defeat in the WCWS finals to win the NCAA title? Answer, the University of Oklahoma. Prime time. Team Tennessee Titans. Position free safety. Spotlight. Discounted out of college, the All-Pro is finally getting his due as one of the best in the league. Now he's hoping to show DB legends that he belongs in their class. Who are we talking about? Kevin Byard, the Tennessee Titans. Kevin Byard plays an often overlooked position in a relatively small market and hails from a college team most casual football fans have never watched on television. So it's fitting that the most famous moment of his career was when a prominent TV personality didn't know who he was. A few months after Byard received his 2017 first-team All-Pro honor, he tweeted at NFL legend-turned-TV star Deion Sanders, questioning how Sanders could name Tyrann Mathieu the game's best safety and not include the two first-team AP All-Pro safeties. The other 2017 All-Pro safety was Minnesota's Harrison Smith. Upon firing back, Sanders referred to Byard on Twitter as a fan. Byard is probably the most complete safety I've ever played with, says fellow Titans safety Kenny Vaccaro. Last season, Byard numbers dipped from 8 interceptions to 4, 16 passes defended to 8, and 2 fumble recoveries to none. He missed out on the 2018 All-Pro team, but the decline in numbers is further evidence that stats, especially for a safety, are finicky. Most football people, especially within the Titans building, believe Byard was better in 18 and by a significant margin. When you go All-Pro, offenses then know who you are, and they're going to try to find ways to factor you out, says Titans cornerback Logan Ryan. I talked to guys who played us this year, and they said, we saw Byard back there in center field. We were not throwing anything deep. In 3 seasons, Byard has established himself as one of the league's best and ranked as one of the top 50 players, according to Pro Football Focus. But before he entered the NFL, Byard was a little-known prospect from a non-power conference, hoping that someone would notice him. Climbing the charts. His football intelligence launched his NFL career. Byard, who grew up in Lithonia, Georgia, outside of Atlanta, started all 4 years at Middle Tennessee State. He performed well at the 2016 Senior Bowl, but while fellow senior bowlers would walk about their NFL combine invites, Byard was left out. I didn't understand why I wasn't getting an invite, he says. My college numbers were off the charts. I broke pretty much about every school record. 19 interceptions, 4 pick sixes, 300-plus tackles. Maybe because I was a small school guy, but I was still accomplished at a D1 program. Of course, Byard wasn't completely unnoticed. In the early 2000s, Titans general manager John Robinson coached at Nichols State, where one of his players was Steve Ellis, Byard's defensive coordinator at MTSU. Steve raved about Kevin, says Robinson, who received text updates every few weeks from Ellis until he finally watched Byard's game film. You don't just stumble into 19 picks, whether it's college, pro, high school, whatever. Byard discovered a silver lining to his combine snub, more personal visits with teams. I ended up taking like 12 visits. I was able to have some real time with those teams, GMs. I was able to sit down with DB coaches and watch film. Byard's agent, David Malgujeda, told him he was being talked about as a 4th-round pick at best and a 7th-round pick at worst. That's not that good, Byard remembers thinking. But after my first week of visits, my agent was like, I don't know what you're doing on these visits, man, but you're starting to climb up draft boards. That included the Titans, and so days before the draft, the Tennessee coaches and executives caravaned 40 miles to MTSU. We got there, and Kevin was sitting in the film room waiting for us, says Robinson. He had everything lined up and was ready to roll. They had no idea that Byard had to be coaxed into attending. I was taking my last visit. It was in Miami, he says. You're eating steak almost every night, so I'm not really in good shape. I get a call from my agent. He said, listen, the Titans want to work you out. This was like a week before the draft. I'd been on the road for 2 straight weeks. I said, I'm not doing any more workouts. Mulgunna, however, sensed the opportunity and convinced Byard to go through with it. The on-field portion of the day lasted about 10 minutes. The rest of the session was spent in the film room and at the whiteboard. The Titans had Byard take them through MTSU's game against Alabama, narrating all the calls and assignments. The Tennessee staff also installed portions of its own defense and tested Byard's comprehension. You could see that he was a very cerebral player, Robinson says. I'll never forget, Byard says with a grin. Former Titans defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau was like, this is the best meeting I've had with any DB. So the Titans took Byard with the first pick in the 3rd round after rejecting offers to trade down. After the pick, offers to trade down, I got a couple of calls from teams that were trying to trade up with us, Robinson remembers, and they said, you just took the guy that we were going to take. It was a wise choice. Byard will play this upcoming season on the last year of his rookie deal, and he should expect to soon get paid like the all-pro that he is. Speaking of which, did he ever hear from Deion Sanders again? No, of course not, Byard says. I wasn't really expecting to, though. He's a legend. He doesn't really have to respond. I'm trying to get that gold Hall of Fame jacket like he has. If I get that gold jacket, then I'll be able to say something to him. Don't you forget about me. Sometimes even the best talent gets overlooked by the league's decision makers. But when these stars got their shot, they got everyone's attention. Adam Thielen, Minnesota Vikings. After a successful career at Division II Minnesota State, Thielen wasn't invited to the combine. Instead, he borrowed money from his father to travel to a regional combine. His performance there turned heads, and he signed with the Vikings as a free agent. He's sixth in the league in receiving yards over the last two seasons. Damon Harrison, Detroit Lions. Harrison dropped out after his first semester at Northwest Mississippi Community College. A former coach of his convinced him to attend Division III, William Penn in Iowa, where he excelled as a run stuffer for 4 years. He's now an all-pro defensive tackle who is affectionately known around the league as Snacks. David Johnson, Arizona Cardinals. Despite his record-setting high school career in both football and track, Johnson only received 2 scholarship offers. He attended Northern Iowa and set multiple school marks for the Panthers. A third-round choice of the Cardinals in 2014, he has since blossomed into one of the best backs in the league. My Path to the Pros by Pete Alonso. Here's a picture of Pete swinging, probably for a home run. As told to Kid reporter Sha'an Gandhi, the Mets rookie sensation has been on a tear, slamming 27 homers through June 23rd, most for a first-year National Leaguer before the All-Star break, all while earning praise from the game's best. While growing up in Florida, Alonso dabbled in many sports, but baseball quickly became his favorite. Now 24 years old, the first baseman is finding out what it's like to be a role model for kids who love the game as much as he does. This off-season, my parents found a video of me and my dad in front of the yard. I was a year and a half or 2 years old. My dad's trying to get me to throw to him, but I never wanted to throw. I wanted to hit. It's funny because not a lot has changed. I always wanted to be in the box. Then my mom says, he's going to go up to be a baseball player. She didn't know how true that was. As a kid, I just loved the game. And playing catch with my dad and hitting in front of the yard wasn't enough. He signed me up for T-ball when I was 3 years old. It was a little early because the minimum age was 4, but my dad was like, I've got to get him on a team somehow. Growing up, I played pretty much everywhere around the diamond, but my best positions were catcher and first baseman. I also played football, lacrosse, soccer, and basketball. I loved all sports, and I played just about everything except hockey. In high school, I knew that I couldn't play them all, so I had to make a very tough decision. Thankfully, I had help in making that decision from my parents. My mom never pushed me toward a particular sport, but instead always said, if you're going to choose something, trust your gut and do it 100%. She helped me realize that my heart wasn't 100% in lacrosse or football, so I chose baseball. Between her and my dad, who coached me until I was 12, they pitched batting practice to me, drove me to practices several times a week. They sacrificed a lot to get me to where I am today. I feel bad for my dad because I went through so many bats growing up. Otherwise, I would have been like a carpenter going to a job site without his toolbox. When I went to college, my dad joked, thank goodness I don't have to pay for bats anymore. Going to the College World Series with the University of Florida 2 years in a row was special, and having the 3 longest home runs in the College World Series at the time was cool. I faced a lot of really talented guys in college and in the minors, a diverse group of players close to the same age as me. That definitely helped prepare me. Once I got to the majors, I immediately realized that all the players, whether they were 24 or 37 years old, had one thing in common. Every single one of us has the little kid inside. We all have this infatuation with baseball and just the pure love and joy. That's why we go out and play. That's why you see guys getting pumped up, flipping their bats or fist pumping and yelling. All the veteran guys have helped me a lot. The overarching message from them has been, you got here and that means you're good enough to stay. That has helped me put in the right mindset to go out and perform. I grew up in Tampa and I watched Evan Longoria when I was a middle schooler, and today I'm playing against him. He's with the Giants now, but he'll forever be known as a Tampa Bay Ray. That is crazy. And then playing against Paul Goldschmidt, the Cardinals' first baseman, I was like, wow, I've watched all his highlights and seen all his plays, and now I'm right there with him. It's definitely a humbling feeling. I was fortunate enough to have many good role models to look up to who helped me realize my dream of being a Major League Baseball player. So when I see a kid walking down the street with my jersey on, it's awesome, because I just want to be a positive figure and an ambassador for the game. I want to be a good role model for kids who play the game with the same passion for it that I do. And here it has a few pictures of Alonzo when he was a kid doing karate, little kid in baseball, and with his dad. Olympic Insider, all about steeplechase, with Colleen Quigley. With 1 year until the Summer Games in Tokyo, a 2016 Olympian explains everything you need to know about this grueling and sometimes wet distance event. While the men's steeplechase has been included in the Olympics since 1920, the event became a race for women less than 4 years before running Colleen Quigley arrived at Florida State University in 2011. Her coach saw her strength in distance events, her long legs and her 5'9 frame, and thought she might be good at the 3,000-meter race that includes 28 hurdles and 7 water jumps, even though Quigley had never jumped over a hurdle before. My first race, I ran at a big meet at Stanford, recalls Quigley. I remember afterward being like, that was fun. I want to do it again. She finished 12th at the 2015 World Championships and 8th at the Olympics the following year. Many people, says Quigley, don't understand just how long the race is, given that a typical hurdle race is one lap. I'll explain the hurdles in the water pit and that you do that for 7.5 laps, and they're like, what? It's insane. I'm like, yeah, it's insane. It's crazy, and I love it. The course. So how does all this craziness happen? During the race, athletes must spring over 30-inch barriers, the same height as the ones used in the 400-meter hurdles. The men's hurdles are 36 inches. These barriers, however, don't just fall down when you hit them. They're made of wood. If you hit the barrier, it doesn't move. It really hurts, says Quigley. I've never fallen on a barrier, but I have grazed it with a foot or a knee, and it's definitely a wake-up moment. A hurdle precedes the water pit, which starts at around 2 feet deep and gradually becomes more shallow until it's even with the track. The strategy. Quigley jumps over most of the wooden barriers as if they are 400-meter hurdles. But when she comes upon the one before the water pit, she steps into the barrier and uses it to launch herself forward. Some athletes can clear the entire pit. 95% of people step on the barrier before the pit, says Quigley. The idea is to get your landing foot on the edge of the water. Just a little splash and your next foot on the dry ground. If your first foot's in the water and your next step is in the water, you're landing too far back in the pit and not pushing off the barrier enough. Some runners push off the same leg every time and finish the race with one dry foot and one wet foot. Not Quigley. I just want to be able to run at the barrier and step on it. Whichever foot comes up, she says, I don't have to change my gait at all. The kicks. Even though Quigley lands in the water, she doesn't slosh her way around the track. Her shoes, which have spikes on the bottom, are very thin and hug her feet. There's not a lot of room for the water to sit in there, she says. You get wet, but then a couple of steps later, all the water between has been pushed out of the shoe and you hardly notice it. Some people race with socks, but I don't, nor do I recommend it. It's just more fabric for the water to soak into. Training for Tokyo. at USA Track and Field Indoor Championships in February, Quigley won the mile, her first national title. During the outdoor season, she's focused on the steeplechase, the race in which she'll try to qualify for the 2020 Summer Games. In Rio, definitely didn't leave me satisfied, she says. I'm coming back this time thinking making the final is a must, and then seeing how well I can do in the final. Can I make the podium at an Olympic final at age 27? It's a pretty ideal spot to be in. Advertisement, communities, and schools. In schools to unlock potential. At the beginning of his freshman year, Jalen's ambition wavered. He lost sight of his goals and found himself straying from his path. Toranio from Communities and Schools became his trusted guide, working with Jalen to improve his attendance, raise his GPA, and set clear goals for the future. Now a senior, Jalen is a first chair trombone player and drum major in his high school marching band. He's exploring musical scholarship opportunities for college, and he has dreams of becoming a United States Marshal. There are millions of at-risk kids like Jalen who need a caring adult to help them stay in school and succeed in life. See how we help all kids succeed. CommunitiesInSchool.org. Poster face. Juju Smith-Schuster versus Alex Pietrangelo of the St. Louis Blues and Juju of the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver. Let's start with age. Juju is 22. Alex is 29. Height and weight. Juju is 6'1", 215 pounds. Alex is 6'3", 210 pounds. Hometown, Long Beach, California for Juju. Alex, King City, Ontario. Nickname, Juju. Given name is John. His aunt started calling him John, when he was little, and that turned into Juju. A former teammate called him Neck because he thought Pietrangelo had a long one. Good guy, Juju, recently launched his own foundation which supports youth initiatives. Smith-Schuster also attended a Pittsburgh area prom with the student after the kid's date canceled on him. Alex, and very active in Friends of Kids with Cancer. One of Pietrangelo's childhood friends died of the disease, and his niece battled it. She's now cancer-free. Nice choreography, Juju. After his bike was famously stolen in 2018, it trended on Twitter, Smith-Schuster celebrated a 97-yard touchdown catch by pretending to put a chain on a sideline exercise bike. It was named Celebration of the Year by USA Today. For Alex, he and his teammate Jaden Schwartz were nominated for Best Handshake for the NHL Fan Choice Awards. They were filmed in the arena tunnel greeting each other with a routine that involves fist pumps and a headbutt and some bizarre screeching. Puppy power. Juju. Boget, his French bulldog, has 186,000 followers on Instagram. Alex, his two poodles, Cooper and Elsa, appeared with him in a blues dog-themed calendar. Hobbies. Juju, sit, video game, Smith-Schuster's. He has said he wants to be a professional gamer. And for Alex, golfing and fishing. Favorite athlete, Juju, Reggie Bush, who was a star at USC, which is the college Smith-Schuster attended. Alex, Nicklas Lidström, the Hall of Fame defenseman, won 4 Stanley Cups with the Detroit Red Wings. Career highlights. First, Alex. 2018-2019, as captain of the Blues, Pietrangelo lifted the Stanley Cup after his team won one of the most improbable titles in league history. St. Louis had the worst record in the NHL in December, but rallied to finish as the 5th seed in the Western Conference. Pietrangelo tied for the lead among all skaters with 16 assists in the postseason. 2013-2014. For the second time in 3 seasons, Pietrangelo was named to the NHL second All-Star team. He helped St. Louis finish the season with 111 points, the second most in franchise history. 2008, 2009, less than 4 months after the Blues took him with the fourth pick in the draft, Pietrangelo made his NHL debut. He played just 8 games with St. Louis, but during the season, he was part of the gold medal-winning Canadian team at the 2009 World Junior Ice Hockey Championships. Juju highlights? Fair weather fans? No way. From athletes like Juju Smith-Schuster to celebs to the most devoted crowds on earth, we salute the people who make sports worth playing. His career highlights? 2018, in his second season, Smith-Schuster led the Steelers in receptions, 111, and receiving yards, 1,426, earning a place in the Pro Bowl. In Week 12 against the Broncos, he had a 97-yard touchdown catch, which tied his own record set in 2017 for the longest reception in team history. In 2017, despite being the youngest player in the NFL, Smith-Schuster wasted little time making an impact in Pittsburgh. In Week 2, he became the second youngest player in league history to catch a TD pass. He was 20 years old and 299 days. The only player younger caught his TD in 1930. He finished the season with 917 yards on 58 catches, helping the Steelers to a 13-3 finish. 2015. Smith-Schuster had the third-best receiving yardage season in USC history, with 1,454. He also led the Trojans with 89 catches and 10 touchdown receptions. He broke his right hand against California on October 31st and had a plate and 8 screws surgically implanted 2 days later. Smith-Schuster was back in the lineup the next weekend against Arizona, catching 8 passes for 138 yards. Juju Schuster. All-Star fans. Juju Smith-Schuster is true to the USC Trojans and admires the greats. I honestly wasn't a big fan of any NFL teams growing up in Southern California. It was just USC. Coach Pete Carroll, running back, Reggie Bush, 2005-2006, that was our NFL team. The Rams weren't here. The Raiders left before I was born. We didn't have an NFL team. The 49ers were close by, but I wasn't too aware of them. My dad was a Bears fan. I heard about the Bears a lot, but I was never really a fan. Every practice USC had, every Saturday home game, I was there. I was watching. I was like, yo, I'm going to be Reggie Bush one day. I wanted to meet Pete Carroll, and my dreams came true. When I met Pete Carroll at a USC kids camp, he told me, I'm a big fan of LeBron James. The dude does it all, on the field, off the field, the way he carries himself. Chief quarterback Pat Mahomes, big fan of his. I like what he does. Great dude. Bears quarterback Mitch Trubisky. I hung out with him this offseason. I love my team and I want to retire a Steeler, but if I could play with one dude, it would be Aaron Rodgers. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, NorthCarolinaReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138.